Because I haven't gotten caught thus far.
That's not a reason to not use safety.
All right.
That's like saying I haven't gotten pregnant yet, so I'm not going to use a condom.
Pulls out his lightsaber from the sleeve, like you remember him doing in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then he pulls up another lightsaber out of the other sleeve. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Shit's about to go down.
That's really cool.
I sent you the tagline.
Oh, you mean the walk from over the fence? Do you want me to read? Is that why you're sending it to me?
I am saying that you are going to host guests.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Patrick speaking, your captain. Hello once again, and welcome to Over the Fence, our podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology. I'm Patrick, and with me are Jonathan.
Hello.
And William.
Hey there.
So we're going to go ahead and get started with our first topic of the day, which is that there seems to be a very strange trend. A lot of big names are leaving a lot of these AAA development studios. For instance, Cliffy B just left Epic. Ken Levine is sort of disbanding Irrational Games a little bit. John Carmack is leaving id. So the question is, where are we going to get our AAA games now? What's going on?
I think that what's going to happen is the industry is going to burn out like we thought it's going to do, like it did before. I think the sign of the times for the video game burnout we had before was that E.T. game, if you recall, for the Atari.
God. You mean the beginning of the gaming industry, basically?
Yeah, but that at that point is where the industry, as we knew it, kind of ended. It kind of hit a wall, and I don't think it was until the Nintendo Entertainment System that things actually started to pick up. And looking back, God, there is a lot of the games in the NES were shit.
yeah, that's safe to say.
So. I don't know, like, I mean, somebody likes to pretend like, you know, these are the good old days, but we had a lot of shovelware back in the good old days.
Yeah. So. It's just it was so hard to develop that, you know, everything was kind of interesting at the very least.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple things that could save where we're at, sort of. Like, stop trying to, like, be the fucking bleeding edge on everything. There's ways to leverage technology as is without having to, you know, shoot for the sky every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just make a fun game, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, we've said before that maybe the way that Nintendo should
William, go... William, what'd you do? You got the police on you again.
Yeah, that'll happen. So, but we've said before that what Nintendo could do is, you know, go and be a developer instead of a games maker. Do we think that maybe Nintendo could, with its huge sums of money, do that viably and maybe be the next, I guess, resurrecting developer to fix the game industry again?
I wonder.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I know they're planning on doing a sort of follow-up console to the Wii U since it kind of failed.
Mm-hmm.
If they would stop living in their franchises, you know, maybe think about something original that would... probably help too.
Yeah,
that's, you know, for all the nonsense of Ubisoft, you know, they are my favorite developer/publisher because they've experimented the most in my experience with different franchises, different worlds, and they've brought some things to fruition that, you know, in some cases weren't super commercially successful, but mm-hmm. have a cult following like Beyond Good and Evil. Mm-hmm.
Well, and let's not forget the Myst series. They owned that for a while.
Yeah, they brought us Assassin's Creed. They're the source of Prince of Persia. They're all the Tom Clancy games, you know. So I felt like it's actually before the Assassin's Creed engine as we know it came from a reboot from Prince of Persia.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they originally intended to do with it.
Really?
But the gritty, hardcore approach that they were taking really wasn't flying with the way they wanted to go with Prince of Persia. So they came up with a new franchise.
Mm-hmm.
The engine's name was Scimitar, originally.
Okay.
And there you go.
So But the point I'm driving at is, like, you know, it's possible to create new franchises and be successful.
Yes.
So now it doesn't have to be, but then, you know, where do you draw the line? Does it have to be Call of Duty successful? You know, because
it could just
Call of Duty is going to regurgitate until it's just actually in the ground. You know that. And Battlefield 4, you know, as we know, tipped over the cliff. You know, and I have an update for you. I've just tried it lately. It's still
bad.
Broken.
So maybe you have to
I definitely think Call of Duty seems like it's on its way down. It doesn't have the kind of fervor it used to. Definitely
it's true.
Not. Definitely not. You know.
Yeah, and I think people wouldn't be so eager to look for a Call of Duty killer like Titanfall or whatever if they didn't know that Call of Duty was in decline. It's like, you know, why bother trying to kill something that's actually good? So people want something that can kill COD. It's just nobody's quite doing it properly. And maybe it's not saying that COD needs to die. Maybe it's saying that the sort of modern FPS needs to be put on the back burner a little bit.
It needs to evolve a little bit. Yeah, definitely.
But, it has evolved. A lot of stuff has changed. I mean, we went from, you know, the straight running gun, you know, where the only way you avoided enemies was strafing.
Yeah, I was with... brain blank.
You think it's Doom?
No, the competitive one.
Unreal Tournament?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is it called? No.
There's that, and then there's the more strategic, and then the more, you know, location-based damage where, you know, a headshot does what a headshot normally does, mm-hmm. but you have, like, different levels of damage to the body. Somebody's crouched behind somebody, somewhere you can see their feet. Put enough bullets in their feet, they go down.
Yeah.
Although I'd argue, you know, in Battlefield 3, if you're firing one of those anti-material rifles, like those 60 caliber sniper rifles, any part of your body where that bullet hits is the end of you.
Yeah.
If it hits you in the knee,
your whole leg
is going to come off. If it hits you in the foot, your foot's coming off, and now you have a big gaping hole of blood at the end of
your
leg.
It's like the PTRS from the World Wars, the anti-tank gun that people then started using as a sniper rifle. That's basically the same thing. Yeah.
That's what it is, anti-material.
Yeah, it's insane.
So, in any case, but, you know, they're closer to realism. Like, the people have shown, like, you know, realistic shooting and realistic stuff like that is not actually fun. The stuff that we design is visceral.
Although there was the sniper game that did pretty well, you know, and it was showing realistic sniping, but it wasn't a multiplayer competitive game.
Yeah.
So
my thought is just that, you know, throughout this generation, the first-person shooter has definitely evolved, but maybe it's time that they think a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought, like, you know, when I play Battlefield 3 and I'm having a really good time, I was like, you know, there's got to be a way to harness this in a scenario basis where I don't have to do it multiplayer with a bunch of internet trolls,
yeah.
And maybe even co-op with, like, friends, but not co-op with friends and horde mode. Like, they always seem to, like, whatever they try to come up with something that fits somewhat like the package I'm looking for, it always seems to go off the cliff. All right, now you can do co-op with friends, and we'll throw enemies at you until you can't take any more. I'm like, no, that's not fun for me.
So they had bots in Black Ops 2, or... Which one was it? I don't know.
They had bots in Modern Warfare, but not on the PC.
Oh, they didn't? Really? It was just console?
No. Yeah, and the PC didn't have local multiplayer.
What's up with that?
Yeah, that would have... If those two things were present, I don't think I would ever stop playing Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's one of the things... That's how I enjoyed Unreal Tournament 2004 and Unreal Tournament 3.
Mm-hmm.
I just threw some bots in and then played. So
I have I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
And they hit, you do, like, even with the bots, you have push and pull. You'll have, you know, times when the bots are winning and you take it back. I had a time with me and two other friends played a match, and we struggled to beat the bots. So it's not like it's, you know, it's completely.
It's not always easy, especially if it's like Super Smash Bros. You throw in three bots and put them all on 8. And it's actually, I mean, yes, if you're really good at the game, it's still pretty trivial because you can you can game the AI and it's not as hard. But, it, you know, for the normal player, it's actually still pretty challenging.
Yeah, but the AI doesn't camp the uncamp. You know, ideally, they don't do all the bullshit, you know.
Yeah.
The snipers who can get on top of the antenna in one place in Battlefield 3 where they can shoot one direction, but you can't shoot back at them because they're behind an invisible wall.
Oh, that's...
In which case, their character shouldn't be allowed to get in there. The invisible wall should extend to the point where they can't get in there.
Right.
But anyway, I think that where we need to head is, you know, maybe something no one's thought of yet, but everyone's thinking too close to what's been successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really hard to say.
They're trying to regurgitate, you know.
It's really hard to say, let's do something new, while because success is so tempting. And it's hard to say, well, what would be successful that is new?
Well, I mean, Titanfall is new in that it's multiplayer only.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah, I mean, the campaign is multiplayer, which is kind of weird.
Mm. So
people have been enjoying it, I think, which is interesting.
But to me, that's not new.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. It's a multiplayer shooter with basically vehicles. Battlefield has tanks and jets. Titanfall has giant robots. So,
and that's what I'm actually interested in about Destiny when it comes out. And I know we're going to be talking about Bungie a little bit later on, but I mean, the whole concept behind Destiny is sort of you take elements from an RPG and a first-person shooter and MMO, and you throw it all together into one game. And it sounds it could either be really good or terrible. I'm not
against the concept. I just don't like it being restricted to the consoles.
The what?
Especially because I'm not against the concept. I just don't like it being restricted to consoles. I also don't understand, like, MMOs have never been big on consoles. You know, so I guess they're trying to make this the first one that is.
Actually, that's a really good point. I wonder, you know, maybe that's their idea. But, you know, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Bungie later. But, you know, we've been talking about what's going to make games different. I think one of the things I'm noticing is that if game developers really want to go on, they have to stop focusing on sort of the structure of the game and start focusing a little bit more on, is it fun? Because, honestly, it seems more and more like that's what gamers are taking more seriously.
You guys
is your
have
game
got
enjoyed?
To try... This podcast that I listen to, you've got to try it, especially the latest episode.
Wait, what's the podcast?
Are you telling our viewers this?
I was going to say, before we accuse you of trying to push drugs on us, try this.
It's called Tone podcast. Control.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the latest one is talking with somebody who developed with Sid Meier.
Mm.
And there is a point where Sid Meier asked the guy a question. The guy was, like, creating this thing, explaining how it's good, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And Sid Meier's question is, who's having fun here?
Yeah.
And the develop, because, like, sometimes it's the developer having fun, but it's not something that's going to be fun for the player. Mm-hmm. And they said that there's all, in all games, there's a certain amount of indulgence. Like, the guy who does the podcast, he did the Gone Home game.
Yes.
So he talks a lot about that, and he also worked on Minerva's Den for Bioshock 2. So those are, like, his big credits. He didn't sort of talk much about anything else but those. But he said, like, the dishwasher in Gone Home is fully interactive, and that was, like, one of the fun things that he did that really isn't designed to make it fun for the player. It was just fun for him to do. So, like, there's a certain amount of, like, I wonder how much of, like, you know, we're just kind of ingratiating developers, you know, some of the stuff they throw in there that... Maybe people may not even see. But the question I wanted to ask you, though, moving a little on but staying in the bullet point, is that I see all these top-down, side-scrolling, three-quarter indie games, and I just none of them are even slightly interesting me. Do you guys, are you embracing these things, or do you think, like, this is the future? Do you want this to be the future?
I do.
I can't say that I agree, but go ahead, Patrick.
I think taking development out of the hands of, like, big corporations and putting them into the hands of, really, at the end of the day, fans, is, I mean, it's not always going to work. It's more of a let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks kind of thing, but you are going to get some interesting creative results out of doing that. You're going to get people who are taking risks. You're going to have people who aren't just sort of playing safe by the book. And you have that happening a little bit more frequently than you see in the actual industry. I mean, some of my favorite, you know, games are indie games. And are they that complicated? No, but they're a lot of fun. Super Meat Boy, it's not too complicated a game, but it's tons of fun, you know? You wouldn't really see a AAA game that is developed like that where the focus is not on the graphics, the focus is not on, you know, it's all just on how much fun can we really make this, how dumb can we make this, you know? And I like that approach to game making a little bit, because at the end of the day, what are games doing? It's for sitting back and just, you know, goofing around instead of getting work done. And as long as you have a development studio that's keeping that at its heart, I think that's good.
I feel honestly. Like that's valid for a lot of single-player games, so or the single-player market. So the indie games that you see often referenced for being really
Fair
successful
point.
Are, you know, Super Meat Boy, the one with the time manipulation, that Limbo. Not Limbo, but Limbo and then the other one.
Braid. Yeah.
Braid, yeah, thank you. Limbo, Braid, Super Meat Boy, Braid, a lot of the Humble Bundle games. But those are single-player experiences, unless you can do leaderboards, kind of, but that's not really competitive.
There's leaderboards, but yeah.
And
that
I think
might also just be because I prefer single-player games, too.
It's possible. So, and, you know, that's a very valid position to take. Most of the gaming market actually prefers either single-player or campaign or, you know, non-online multiplayer, basically.
See, I would add to that I prefer also immersive games.
I
want to, like, live in the world that I'm playing in, which is why I enjoy Batman, Assassin's Creed, Mass Effect, mm-hmm. BioShock. I'm in this place. I'm experiencing this. It's like the nth degree of a Disney World ride.
Mm-hmm. And soon, Oculus Rift and things that you'll be able to take to more nth degrees. But I think
we'll
that's the...
We'll see Oculus Rift-wise.
Well, I think that the AAA game studios have the ability to, I guess, take that immersion and make it even more visceral with better graphics, it's sort of a trade-off, because you get the more money, you can have a better development cycle, maybe take some more time with it, but you usually have a board of directors controlling at least some portion of the creative process, so...
Well, I was trying to think, mm-hmm. what is the budget right now for AAA titles?
Couldn't even imagine. Millions.
I mean, obviously, at least that much.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if they indicate how much they cost.
I don't know.
Battlefield 4 budget was $100 million.
Jesus.
So... I don't think they have to cost that much.
No, definitely not.
No.
I bet a lot of that cost is also advertising. You know, it says, oh, we spent $100
yes.
million, dollars, but we spent $30 million on, you know, 2 months of one-minute commercials during prime time or whatever.
Well, you know that, what was it, the Star Wars MMO?
Yeah, was it level...
The Old Republic, right?
Are we not talking
about that?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the one that got canned. Okay.
It's not canned, it's just not...
It's in development hell?
No, it's free-to-play freemium, you know what I'm talking about.
The level, whatever it was?
Which one are you talking about, John?
EA made it. It's BioWare and EA made it.
Okay, so you're talking about the Old Republic.
Yeah, they spent upwards of, what, $160
million? Yeah, it was one of the most expensive games ever made, period.
So EA was pretty much assuming that it was going to be the Alpha and the Omega. So.
And then it wasn't. It was good. People liked it. People played it, but...
See, I tried firing up a little while ago because I was having, after the Clone Wars, I was having a Star Wars itch.
Yeah.
So I got the first Force Unleashed, which doesn't hold up as well as I was hoping. Although it was ported by a Mac porting house, which is probably where its weakness comes from. But then then I grabbed Tor, so I want to be a Sith. I want to do some Sith stuff.
Yeah, Force show.
And then I'm like, you know, oh, I've got to run all the way over here. And now I have to run all the way. Fuck this.
I'm done.
I'm like, this is, I get, you know, that it's designed to waste time meticulously, but like I have like a window of like game enjoyment in my evening, and that's way too much time consumption.
Yeah.
You need to have like not a household full of animals that need a lot of upkeep. You need to not have like a bunch of things you have to do all day long to be able to enjoy a game like that. And I do have stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the people who do enjoy games like that, they pick that over, you know, having a life.
Yeah.
And what little bit of a life I have, it's a life.
Yeah.
So you guys are on board with the indie stuff. I want to stay with the AAA, which is why I'm kind of like, you know, hugging Ubisoft, because they hit the middle ground, in my opinion. Their game budgets aren't, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, but they're still hitting on like good AAA titles.
I think I lean more towards your camp, Nathis. I know Patrick is basically OTF's resident indie gamer, I would call you.
I would say Eric.
Eric? Okay. I haven't heard much from him lately.
Yeah, Eric more so than me. He actually recommends stuff to me. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But yeah.
He bought me FTL, and I'm like, 2D? I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is, like, I want to get into these games, and then I can't. You know, my 2D gaming golden age was Jazz Jackrabbit, so... like
my CD gaming golden age was Riven.
Yeah, fair enough. So it's hard to get into a new thing like that.
So what are you guys looking forward to in 2014? Is there anything really grabbing you?
Not really.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, you have the new computer, so you're sort of set with catching up, and I have to play catch up once I upgrade too. I mean, I was really looking forward to Watch Dogs. I hope it's good. But I also am. I own, for instance, a bunch of stuff.
Is Watch Dogs going to be on PC?
I just can't play.
Yeah.
It is? Okay, so I don't have to worry about it being on PlayStation. That's good.
Yeah, the Watch Dog is on a descendant of the Assassin's Creed engine.
Oh, excellent. No, my problem is Kerbal Space Program just came out with a NASA patch.
I heard about
you can
that.
Go and intercept asteroids.
I heard that... The Kerbals can literally sit, you can like put their chairs on the outside of the ship.
Yes. Yeah, you can put, I think they're called John Falstaff chairs. I'm not really sure who John Falstaff is, but yeah, you can basically go, you know, how I learned to love the bomb and like go sit on a rocket.
Have you ever heard of perceived value?
Perceived value as in the concept or?
Like,
yeah.
Here's an example from my own lifestyle. When I lived in Vegas, I had enough money to make man's meat, but only just.
Mm-hmm.
So things like eating on McDonald's was like something I could barely afford, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's, and if I wanted to eat at like a gourmet taco place or whatever, like that was, I could do that once a pay, and then, you know, it's back to, you know, peanut butter and jelly
mm-hmm.
for the rest of the existence. And so, like, whenever we saw a movie, it didn't matter what it was amazing because we were seeing a movie.
Yeah.
We weren't sitting at home doing nothing. And so, I feel like, you know, most of my games were bought, you know, at AAA title release prices, and in some cases, you know, sight unseen, and regrettably so. But I wonder if some of my enjoyment comes from that part of the experience.
Oh, certainly.
Some of my games don't hold up very well on replays these days
mm-hmm.
because I sort of see them like when I bought Crysis 2, it was kind of a dry time. It was like, okay, I've got a new game and oh my God, it looks amazing in this area. And so maybe I kind of looked past some flaws that the game had in it, but still enjoyed it. Similar with Crysis 3. And I wonder if that's going to happen with me with like, Wolfenstein when it comes out.
Maybe. I mean,
because it's like, there's nothing I haven't had a new game since last November.
Yeah. I mean, there are, like, valid psychological studies that have been done that, yeah, if something costs more, people will justify it by, you know, in various ways, mm-hmm. saying, you know, this is better. And so, yeah, I think that's a valid point.
Sort of like paying to go to the gym, and you go because, well, damn, I'm paying for
exactly. You know, it's a really... Someone came up with an interesting model, just sort of a tangent for the gym. Basically, you make mm-hmm. people pay for days that they don't go to the gym, and suddenly people would go to the gym all the time, you know, but
yeah,
it's assigning a value that is very extreme will make you value the commodity much more.
Yeah. So I wonder, that's probably why they never split Call of Duty up into like, you know, the multiplayer and the campaign cost, because once you reduce the price, then you're saying this is the budget version.
Yeah.
So I understanding these variables, it's kind of interesting, you know, to watch the push and the pull of the industry, and maybe that's part of why, you know, the indie games and the cheap games, and they look cheap, you know, it's just kind of, it leaves me on the sideline, because I'm like, I don't want the Ford Escort, I want the fucking Bentley.
Yeah.
You know, so that's...
that might be where I am. Except KSP is awesome, so I don't know, whatever.
So, 2014, you mean, there's three titles that interest me, and that's, thus far, that's all I know that's going to catch my attention. So, anyway, moving forward.
Yes.
I have had a little experimentation, a little flirtation, if you will, with gaming in the living room. Moved my whole computer monitor in the living room.
And how'd that
I already have a surround speaker set up there. So all I had to do was, I had the computer kind of next to my easy chair, and I bought a long HDMI cable to go to the receiver. So that sent the video and the audio to where it needed to go, so everything else was near me. So if I needed to like put a disk in the drive, the computer was just behind the table, hit the drive, and put the disk in if need be. I have one monitor next to me on the table. I was going to get an arm so it could be easily pivoted out of range when necessary. Turns out my table really is not
sturdy enough
for that setup. The monitor itself weighs about 15 pounds. That's a big deal when you put it off kilter.
I was going to say, that arm is a great torque action moment.
Yeah, so I found the perfect thing. It's like this plate that sits under the chair with an arm connected to it, and it easily pivots out of the way. And they don't make it anymore.
Of course they don't.
I was gaming with a 360 gamepad, which does have its difficulties. So, and also the proximity of my TV, it's a good 10 plus feet away, and it's only a 37 inch, so games are a little hard to read because the PC games are not scaled for a big screen TV like console games are.
I don't know. I don't think I could stand being. I have this thing where I can't stand being more than about three and a half, 4 feet away from whatever I'm playing on.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I tried like moving the ottoman because my gamepad was wireless, and I'm sitting there like I feel like a little kid. The point of being in here is that my easy chair.
Clearly, I'm a child at heart.
So I ended up backing off of that and going back to the desk setup. And so my resolution is I do want to be able to game in the living room, but I just can't commit to using my computer in that fashion full time. Because I'm too used to the convenience of being able to read the monitors from their close proximity.
And suddenly a laptop becomes somewhat desirable.
Well, not a laptop per se, but NVIDIA has that Shield device that I could use for streaming, but that may not be the way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think the end result is that I'm still kind of favoring keeping the computer as sort of like the source, the server, and what have you, and then stream video and games to the TV.
What's the lag on the NVIDIA?
I can't say. I haven't bought one yet. But I'd imagine it's similar to the lag of, like, if you ever stream video content to your TV. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's instantaneous, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, see, that me being an FPS player would be my greatest worry. You know, I wouldn't necessarily...
But this isn't streaming over the internet. This is streaming inside of my own household.
No, that's fair. But, I mean, if it's... You were talking
about lag, controller lag to console.
Yeah, but that's manageable. And you were talking about the difference between wired and wireless. Like, I imagine if you could set it up wired, you wouldn't have too much of an issue. I mean,
that's actually your only option.
Yeah.
You Bluetooth one particular controller and wire two others, one of which is the 360 controller. And the 360 controller is a mini USB adapter.
Okay. No, I mean, like, the connection between the NVIDIA and your TV.
Yeah. I would definitely want wired if it supports it, but I don't know for sure if it does.
Because then I'm not worried about lag. It's always the wireless is what gets me with lag because, yes, it's always.
But I experimented with Big Picture. The Big Picture UI crashes.
That's unfortunate.
So it crashes in-game. So the game will continue to play, but your ability to go in and out of the game through the UI is broken. Something about the NVIDIA driver, it kept losing the scaling for the TV. It's just there's a lot of little gotchas. So
it's still beta, kind of.
Yeah. So the thing I favor is the idea of like a streaming Steam box, maybe, because the NVIDIA Shield still seems a little off, and it's $200. It's not if it were like maybe $50, maybe $100, I would be more bold about trying it. But $200 is kind of pushing the border of. Well, it sounds like there's definite possibilities for it not to work. But I do still support the idea of like PC gaming in the living room, just not making that the only place your PC is connected to. One thing I've thought about doing is actually just moving my computer lock, stock, and barrel, desk, everything, into the back room. And then when I want a game on the TV, just switch my left display from computer monitor to TV. I could do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
because that's what I do. My left monitor is just it's the fun one.
Yeah,
that
it same here.
The games. And the right monitor is all the reference, you know, the buddy list, the chat windows and everything.
Yeah, I recently banished my right monitor to a stand off my desk, so my left monitor now occupies the grand command center of my desk, which is nice. Yeah.
What I wanted to do is have a ground stand for the left monitor with one of those balanced arms that would make it easy to wheel in and out of my space.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
And so instead of do on the left monitor what the right monitor would, you know, in front of the TV, my plan also included getting a bigger TV, which I ended up not doing. I mean, I still intend to do it, just it's, you know, I need a new front door and other things. Just suddenly practicality is, you know, burning my world away here. But so I've experimented with the living room situation. I think I definitely want to go that route, and I will recommend it. You know, it's kind of like the sort of thing, like every once in a while you just want to sit in your easy chair. And that Steam gamepad, I think, is going to cross that border where, like, it might be just the controller use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And about the controller, there's a certain, because the controllers tend to move a little bit slower than the mouse, they feel less jumpy when you're playing games. Games feel smoother. It feels like a very different experience with a controller. I'm not saying that, you know, I love it. Primarily, like, I had to turn off the auto-aim in Dishonored because the mouse pointer kept trying to automatically track enemies. And while it's automatically tracking, it's not aiming where the fuck I want it to aim. So I had to turn that off. So, like, auto-aim doesn't always help. So, so I'm not saying the controller is the alpha and the omega, but I can see the appeal of that difference.
It's fair.
So, speaking of different...
We will, yeah... We'll get there.
We're about to have some difference in the music from Bungie.
Oh, well, okay, so it's this is our next point, yeah. So Martin O'Donnell, who is the composer for
Marty.
Yeah, most known as for his score to the Halo series, which, you know, Will and I are both very familiar with.
I love the score.
Recently just fired from Bungie under very mysterious circumstances. And it's got some people upset, myself included.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we're not sure why, but...
Yeah. I mean, there's a theory going around on Reddit particularly. There was a post that was made that was later deleted because of lack of proof. Somebody claiming to work for Bungie. There's no evidence of this.
Yeah, this is all alleged.
This is true.
So.
But it sounds pretty, like,
yeah.
It sounds like exactly something that would happen, which is that apparently he was trying to negotiate a raise with the board of directors, and the board of directors was sort of already under the impression that he was being paid more than he needed to already. So a fight ensued, which led to them just sort of cutting their losses with him completely and just getting rid of him, even though everyone on Bungie loves him so much and want him to stay around. It
everybody
was just,
who plays the games usually love
yes,
Marty.
Everyone.
Like, everything
There's
he's... done about the series. Say what you will about, you know, the quality of the Halo games as it went on, the sound, the music always stayed very good.
I was actually talking with a few friends about this, and there's a very important thing that you notice very early on about Bungie, which is that for, like, a AAA Western game, it places probably more emphasis on sound, on audio, on music than a lot of other games of its type. I mean, it's the way it is actually involved into the gameplay, the way it's actually tied into the gameplay, what you're doing, the scenery, what everything's happening with the action in the game. It's taken way more seriously and way more heavily than a lot of other Western AAA games.
Well, there's a lot of that.
Of its type. I mean, certainly not Call of Duty.
Like,
certainly not, you know.
I remember when I played Giant Citus Kabuto years ago, I was just blown away by the music because, mind you, this is like late 90s.
Sure, yeah.
And the game was very colorful, very cartoony, and also very vulgar with the art, with the jokes. But it's the first time I'd ever really looked into like a composer for a video game outside of like the Myst games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said that the studio said that they wanted him to aim for a John Williams sound. It's like, that's interesting. A John Williams sound.
Yeah.
And it's like, and a lot of the movies I've liked throughout my formative years were John Williams scores.
He seems to do no wrong.
So I just thought, maybe that's why it resonated so much with me. The sound he was shooting for hit very close, you know. But I've I've heard in the Video Games Live the Halo stuff, and some of it's good, but it's just that it doesn't resonate as much to me because I have never really played the games.
There's a lot of it in when you're playing, and you'll sort of stop and notice, whoa, this is a really cool moment that's happening right now musically.
Yeah. I have a problem with that. I mean, I don't know if you guys are like this, but like if I haven't like been through the experience, I can't enjoy the music. Like it's like my mind won't even let myself do it.
Sometimes it's with certain games I can, certain games I can't. I understand what you're saying though. Yeah, where you want to have the actual emotion to be able to, you know, sort of tie it in with you. And I do agree about that. The interesting thing about oh, crap, I lost my train of thought. it's just gone. One of the interesting things about him, though, about Martin O'Donnell, I don't know if this is the point I was going to make, but it's still a valid point. I mean, he has been in sort of sound design of some of my favorite games since, like, way back. I mean, he was actually on the staff of Cyan Worlds when they're working on Riven.
Yeah.
There's actually a creature in the Myst universe that's called the Yttram, which is Marty spelled backwards, that was created... specifically because they enjoyed working with him so much that they named something after him. That's back in 99. Like, or back when 97, whenever
it came from. I thought it strangely played into like some technology in there. It's like maybe somehow the frog was part of it, because like, why would they use such a strange name?
No, but he did a lot of the sound with Robin Miller. He did a lot of the sound design for Riven. He actually composed a few tracks for the game, and they turned them down because they're like, no, we got to keep it consistent with the first game, so we got to stay with Robin. But he's been, and just to see him go like this is really just a shame, and it's just it's aggravating. It really is. It's really aggravating.
Yeah, I look forward to Destiny. I hope that they come to the senses and bring a PC version. And I mean not like a crappy port. I mean like a legitimate PC version.
Yeah.
But either way, it's not on my radar because of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm also assuming that despite the fact that he's been fired, that they're still going to use his score for Destiny. And that really this is just anything post-Destiny that affects him. I'm assuming. I really hope that's the case because... I mean, I know he put a lot of work into the Destiny score. He worked with Sir Paul McCartney on certain parts of it, actually.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was thinking is that, you know, does that firing require them to part ways with, you know, his work? And if not, you know, how much work has to be done outside of what he's
done? Yeah, how much do they have to half-ass before the release? Yeah, I'm assuming he signed some sort of waiver. Yeah.
And how obvious is that going to be?
Yeah.
So Destiny's out in September, looks like.
There's no way that they'd be able to do it. Yeah.
So anyway, let's move forward to our 2014 gaming forecast.
Yes. Yeah.
William, what's your which has your eye in 2014?
Actually, I don't remember if it comes out in 2014 or not. But really, the only thing on my horizon in any capacity is the new game called Evolve from Turtle Rock, which is the developer that made Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2, and it's what I would call a cross between Left 4 Dead and Borderlands, in that it's a little bit more than four survivors being pitted against like an enemy, and it's more that there are four of you. Each of you has an assigned role of, you know, of support, assault, medic, different things basically, and you're against one person who is kind of an Uber version of the tank from Left 4 Dead. That's where I really see the connection. Instead of having a horde of zombies and a tank that is randomly assigned sometimes, it's just this giant monster that you're fighting.
It looks like it kind of scratches the itch of, like, Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's also, you're in sort of a nature-ish preserve. Basically, the four people who are hunting the monster are mercenary hunters. That's their job. And so, yeah, it's definitely got a kind of Jurassic Park-y kind of feel. So it scratches several itches at once, I think. But that's really the only big thing that I'm interested in right now. And as we've said repeatedly, I'm sort of still going through the backlog, except it's going to be slowed down significantly because I'm starting school again. So
Patrick, is your 2014 forecast, is it just build PC, play backlog of games?
Well, that is part of it. I mean, there's a couple of games that have already come out that I want to play. For instance, Stick of Truth came out recently, and anybody that was a fan of South Park was just going, oh, you have to get it, you have to get it, it's so good. And I've always liked them, I've always liked their work, and I like the fact that they had complete creative control over the design of the game, and it looks a lot of fun.
You could ask Rob to play that, actually.
Yeah, no, I know he was doing the stream of it, which looked, yeah.
Well, he's got the Friends and Family Steam beta, whatever. So if you wanted to, you could ask him. He could hook you up.
Again, part of it is, I'm sure it probably runs fine on my computer. I just don't know.
I bet it would.
I know it's not 3D. It's something that is designed to resemble the actual felt. But yeah.
Well, I mean, you could try it out. It costs you nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
So that all looks, that looks very good. I want to try that out. I'm also, of course, Watch Dogs come out later, but no chance in hell I'm going to be able to play it when it comes out.
I guess I'll get that.
Yeah, I'm on the page with Watch Dogs. My three titles that I'm watching are the new Wolfenstein, whatever, Watch Dogs, and then near the end of the year, the new Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah. I have to say, and you're going to laugh at me, John, for this, you're going to laugh at me, I'm actually kind of pumped for Mario Kart 8, just based on what I've seen of it. I don't own a Wii U, but like I have friends that do, and I can just anticipate that this is going to be just tons of fun to play with my friends. It looks really impressive for a game that's on Wii U. Just the way they're working with light and just the way everything looks is really nice.
No matter how many times you guys talk about Nintendo, it never fails to sicken me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the camp of I have affection for Nintendo. I want them to do something good, but I am expecting absolutely nothing at this point. So
I think that's why, because when you're expecting absolutely nothing, and then something as nice as Mario Kart 8 sort of comes out, you actually get a little bit excited for it. Because I have no expectations from them.
If Mario Kart 8 is good, if, Zelda, what's it called, is good, if...
There isn't a Zelda game coming out.
Well, no, it's the, what is it called? Yeah, the spinoff.
Warriors?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Hyrule Warriors is good, if Mario Kart 8 is good, if maybe one or two other games are legitimately good...
Well, let's not forget Smash eventually.
Okay, Smash. That might push me over the edge to getting a Wii U, just because, you know, nothing about the PlayStation 4 has made me get it, and that was the one that I was leaning towards before.
Yeah, so. I mean, because I'm figuring with most of the games I'm going to end up playing, the only two kind of games, like the exclusives for Wii and PC games, are really the only two that I'm, you know what I mean? So,
that's the reason why I was maybe leaning towards the PS4, is because the exclusives were better, but... There's nothing really that I care about right now.
And like you were saying, John, I am assuming that eventually they'll come to their senses and release a PC version of Destiny. But, you know.
Eventually.
Yeah, but then they released a PC version of Halo 1 and Halo 2.
But did not do Halo 3.
Both of them were terrible ports.
Yeah. Halo CE wasn't that bad. Wasn't great. It was
actually quite terrible because of the mouse tracking.
Oh, was it? I guess it wasn't so bad on whatever version I was playing for whatever.
Well, I was a connoisseur of first person shooters before I received that game as a gift.
The mouse.
What's up with GTA 5, by the way? Have they talked at all about whether or not they're gonna? I mean, I know there isn't a PC version of it, but come on.
I thought that they've leaked that they're going to, but it has to like they. The way they treat it is they have to have like success on the consoles before they decide.
Okay,
which makes sense. That's totally legitimate.
I guess, you know, low hanging fruit and all that.
Yeah.
So, some of the game titles have release dates that are like on GameStop, who they guesstimate most of their dates. 12/31/2014, which pretty much says it's possibly going to be 2015, which is where Assassin's Creed Unity falls. Also, the Borderlands pre-sequel.
Yes.
Yeah. And
so, now after Borderlands 2, I'm not really looking forward to more Borderlands.
Yeah, I know that left a not a great taste in your mouth with the loot system.
I just just give me something that's useful, but everything mm-hmm. that's dropping, I mean, like, I did the whole, the end boss of Tiny Tina, and all these chests, you can pay more iridium to open them a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, right? I'll just pay the iridium. That way I'll get better drops. Nothing. Nothing at all.
Just absolutely nothing.
I had better pistols. I had a better sniper. I'm like, nothing useful is dropping. And so, like, I must have to get to a certain level.
Maybe.
I'm not at the right level or something.
Have you checked around on forums at all? Because maybe it's... I know in Diablo there are actually tiered level drops. So, like, at, you know, from 61 to 66, you'll only drop level 61 items. From 66 to 70, you'll only drop 66 and
below.
That's
the only thing I can assume. Like, my friend, he got some cheat engine thing, which allows him to, like, dial his rare drops way up. And it's more steps than I care to go through for the game.
Sure. Like, you shouldn't have to do that.
But he said that's the only way he has guns that do all these crazy stuff that he tells me about. I was like, well, that's great that they exist.
Yeah.
But I have not seen one.
I was going to say, let's make that available in the vanilla game. You know, not make it so infinitesimally rare that...
So I really think they nailed it in Borderlands 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the variations they put on the guns in 2... were not fun. Like, the sniper rifle that bounces, like, the bullets have to bounce once before they can impact something.
Yeah.
So you have to always be shooting at the ground near your enemy. Like,
that's,
yeah, this is
that's
fun.
Not great. I don't want to do geometry when I'm shooting something.
So when you were, like, talking about all these features with the pre-sequel, like, the oxygen variable, I was like, that doesn't sound like making the guns more fun for me.
Well, no, and admittedly, that's why I'm only cautiously optimistic about this game, because... Basically, you know, I heard the plot, you know, tentatively it's about Jack and some of his people, Wilhelm, the woman who runs Lynchwood, and another character that I can't recall. It's about them trying to take back a Hyperion outpost
really...
on the moon. And so that to me is interesting, because it's, oh, you're playing the villain from the second movie ostensibly as the protagonist. Oh, the last character is Claptrap, which, I'm not excited about Claptrap as a playable character.
Neither.
I think
they took a lot of things and dialed up
the zany.
Some things, and in some cases they landed on gold, and they take cases they didn't.
But
I still hold that Tiny Tina DLC
was
just amazing.
On. Yeah. So,
but then one of those things that I run into, though, is the problem that, like, if you want to replay that DLC, the only way to do it is to level a character all the way up again.
Oh, really?
And it's like, okay, well, that's no fun. Or you can pick one of the other playthroughs that, you know, are going to hammer you into the ground.
Mm-hmm. I still get to play it.
I was going to say, I don't have it, but eventually
so, yeah,
I will get it.
I am excited, because everybody talks very highly of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And if you guys are familiar, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, the girl who does the voice of Tiny Tina...
Mm-hmm.
Is the sister of the guy who, I can't think of his name. He used to do something called Revrant on Destructoid.
Oh,
and
they do
a video series of called Hey Ash, What You Playing? Or Hop.
Oh, is that her?
That's her. Tiny.
What?
And I picked up one of her Hey Ash videos. The voice she did sounded just like Tiny T. I'm like, no, that's not her. And I looked it up on IMDb, and, like, one of the only credits she has is as a voice actress.
I gotta say, I love those moments when you're listening to a game or a cartoon or anything, and you go, wait a minute, that sounds a lot like this person. And you go and look it up, and you're like, yeah, it's totally that person, and it's awesome.
I'm totally that smart.
Do you remember that one episode of Avatar The Last Airbender where you stopped and you go, wait a minute, is that? And then it was George Takei.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Did anybody else have that moment? Yeah.
Well, I just heard Lisa Cuddy from House in the new Airbender. She's the sister of Tenzin.
Oh, wait, she's...
Really?
She's, oh my god, I can't remember. I can't.
Sorry?
No,
Or something?
I'll get it. Continue, I'll get it, and I'll mention it, but yeah.
Well, anyway, the pre-sequel, Will and I were talking, and he was talking about all these different features of the game, and I don't know, it looks to some extent, it just kind of looks
gimmicky.
Maybe outside of my tolerance level for what I want the game to look
like. And that's why I'm only tentatively optimistic, is because the as I said, the plot looks decent. If they manage to rein in the weird gun sort of quirks and bring it back to something more like Borderlands 1, you know, that'll be good. That was my issue with Borderlands 2, is I couldn't figure out how to compare guns very easily. In Borderlands 1, it was really straightforward. I could sort guns very quickly.
Borderlands 2, the only way you could figure it out was to literally load up the guns and their competitors and fire them.
Yeah, and I didn't like that at all.
And they gave you a little dummy to shoot at in Sanctuary.
Oh, yeah.
So you could actually, like, you know, have him brought out, and then you could shoot him and see what kind of damage and crits you were getting off of him. And you could kind of measure, you know, is this worth using? Because my thing I always stick to is elemental guns.
Yeah.
Because
that is the way to go. If you
land a shot, there's always residual damage.
Yeah, I always the first playthrough I did when I got to Bloodwing, I got my ass handed to me because I was really stupidly basically running black damage weapons, just non-elemental. And then I did a second playthrough and I went all elemental and the fight was a cakewalk. You definitely have to. I think they emphasized elemental damage way more.
Yeah. And if he does one element damage, you need to do a different one to damage him.
That was what happened. But
yeah, like a lot of the guns, like you'll look at the stats and like you'll point at it and they'll bring up a little window and look at the stats. Like, oh, that sounds really good, and you'll load it
and
up.
It's terrible.
And the fire rate would be like, you know, like you fire it and the bullet takes like 10 seconds to reach this target.
Yeah, it's like it'll say you're firing, you know, three times faster than your other gun, but it fires grenades or something.
So like there's just every way that you can think about it, there's a way to not win.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I feel like the first game didn't jack you around so much with that stuff.
No, it was very straightforward.
This is not a way that I want the game to expand on me. So I just feel
that's
like,
fair.
I feel like this next game could go that much more meta and be that much worse.
It's going to be another one of those wait a couple weeks to a month, hear the reviews, watch some gameplay, maybe like watch a Let's Play, look at what's going on and then decide whether I want to buy it. So we'll see. It's, you know, it is a Borderlands game, so it does have that leap back going for it.
So let's move a little forward here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
New Captain America movie came out.
Yep.
Yes, which, okay, maybe it's a conversation I should leave.
Well,
just take your headphones off.
A couple of things that don't spoil the movie that I'm going to tell you about that maybe you don't know. The guy who plays Captain America is, I think, contractually obliged to do one more Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
One more Captain America movie, and he's out, and he doesn't want to do any more acting.
Chris Evans said that he doesn't want to do it really anymore, and I think that maybe he'll get out for a while and eventually come back, perhaps, but I have no issues with him getting out of movies.
Yeah. I don't know if they digitally enhanced him in the movie, but there was a point where he's standing somewhere. I'm like, God, he is, like, really obscenely built.
He's
right
pretty
now.
Jacked. The really extreme CGI effects that they did on him were for when they made him skinny in the first one. He is legitimately quite jacked in real life. Maybe not quite to the extent of what you see in the movie, but it also could be of, you know, who he was standing next to.
There was a point when he was standing somewhere in a building and he's just standing there in a wife beater, and it's just like, I can see, like, the straight T from his neck out to his shoulders.
Yep.
And that super narrow waist, and I'm just like, that's, like, I need to check into that. So later on, I bring up pictures of the first movie, and he's not even quite that jacked in the first movie.
I think they had him get more ripped for the second movie.
Yeah.
He had more time to work out.
So the only slightly spoiler thing I have to talk about is that the combat that he engaged in.
Okay, why don't you continue that while I go downstairs?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
The combat he engaged in one section looked like a really, really good video game, and it's like, I want to play this game.
Yeah, that was
it's kind of it. it kind of actually was reminiscent of, like, the Batman Rocksteady games.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, where, like, you just kick a lot of ass, and it's like, like, you just want to do
You could you see the combos. You know, like, the combo counter, you could see it adding up. And it was really funny. When I was watching the movie, I went with my brother. You know, I started counting the enemies that he was taking down, so I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, wait, no, he's not down. Okay, 6. And it was great. I love it. And then you get to the sort of the mini boss of the stage, who's the heavy hitter.
I wonder if that was, like, intentional to, like, look like.
I would love to get a maybe I'll find a director's cut of the movie and see what exactly they were doing during that scene, because that was a really well done scene. And he meets up with his, you know, you meet up with your friends during the mission, and then you continue forward. It's a classic video game scenario. I loved it.
Maybe that's why I thought that. It just seems like it's a very video game.
Yeah, there was so much about that movie to like. Just they did the villains well. They did a lot of the sort of Easter eggs. They did really well.
The one guy, the guy who played Falcon. I've seen him in movies before, but he's not been quite that buff.
No, I think the standards for superhero movies in terms of, like, the people who are strong, I feel as if they're investing far more into the getting buff aspect of things.
I mean, he almost looks fat. Like, his arms almost look fat.
Yeah, no, that's true. Although he wasn't even meant to really be that strong. Like, he was supposed to be the guy who's kind of in shape, but he's the pilot. He's the stick jockey. He was, when put in comparison to the sort of meathead guy from Hydra, like, he was not that big at all, which was kind of funny. It was supposed to sort of,
maybe because he was actually not that big of a person.
Yeah, maybe that's true, because I guess the Hydra guy was supposed to be the Ivan guy from Rocky, just, like, steroids, way too ripped. Perhaps, although different country, since it's not Russia, it's Germany.
That's prompted me to look at pictures of the Amazing Spider-Man guy.
Garfield?
Yeah.
Spider-Man is always supposed to be kind of a swimmer's physique, where you're lean, you've got...
Yeah, it's funny, like, you see a picture of him just standing around, you know, in the costume, and he looks kind of like, I guess the costume just doesn't flatter your physique.
Not really.
He looks actually kind of strangely bulky.
Interesting.
But then you see, like, all the stuff.
Are you guys showing spoilers? CGI.
Yeah, now we're talking about Spider-Man.
Really, okay, good. Spider-Man.
But, it actually looks like that's a gymnastic move, but the person's actually physically there in the scene. That's nice.
Wait, what's going on?
This picture I found.
Oh, okay.
It won't load because it's like 6,000 by 4,000.
Oh, awesome. Sort of speaking, a quick tangent on Spider-Man, I'm really, just from the trailers, I'm excited because I think they are hinting at the Sinister Six, which is Doc Ock, Vulture, Electro, Mysterio, and I'm probably missing some, Goblin and Chameleon. But in the trailer for Spider-Man, they clearly have Doc Ock's harness and also
Vulture's wings.
Wings, and I'm really excited about that. So I think that will be number three. Two is going to be Green Goblin and Electro, and then I think three might be the Sinister Six, and that would be amazing. Just because.
So in this movie, Harry Osborn is the Green Goblin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently?
I don't think so.
Not Norman?
I don't think so.
Well, the stills have been of Harry's, I don't know the actor's name, but they have been him wearing the combat suit on the glider. So
The guy saying that we have such plans for you in the trailers doesn't sound like it's the Harry guy.
It looks like him. So maybe, if it doesn't start as Harry, maybe if you know, they might go through the Norman Osborn Goblin transition to the Harry Osborn Goblin very quickly, because that does happen. That's canon. So we're not sure. Although
let's argue canon.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. You know,
hey,
but,
At least there won't be a big old goofy Green Goblin robot suit in this movie.
I mean,
it's close to it, actually.
Yeah.
Really? No, because I thought, based on the artwork I'm seeing, it's his actual face that's, gobliny instead of him wearing a big goofy
mask.
Well,
he might be wearing a mask initially that gets pulled off. Just because, flying around, I wouldn't want to do it with no mask or helmet or anything like that, but...
So I want to make a very meta reference here that I've noticed.
Sure.
Since the advent of HD stuff, have you noticed that all the superhero costumes have to be textured?
Oh, that's a good point. That's kind of hilarious.
And I think the reason being is that so that, the HD shows.
Yeah, that could be. Because, if you think about the Superman costume, it's got kind of...
little truncles in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually put little S's in his S.
Well, that was in the last Superman costume. This one is just all veiny, and I actually think they went a little overboard with the Superman costume.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that.
But every Spider-Man. I mean, think of it, the X-Men. Everyone's got to be textured.
I gotta say though, I like the Spider-Man costume and the Amazing Spider-Man too, because it's the best of both worlds, where it has that sort of. In a new age superhero movie where everything's really, it has that sort of grainy texture to it, but at the same time, it just screams Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, and that's I really like the Ultimate Spider-Man costume design. So,
yeah,
it looks really. And actually, I was having a conversation with a few people about this, or might have just been Reddit. I don't know, but I have to say, would you guys agree that Tobey Maguire, better Peter Parker, but new guy, better Spider-Man?
Yeah, I would say that's the common consensus, too.
Tobey Maguire is better sort of the awkward Peter Parker, but, guy just...
Andrew Garfield's, he's not awkward enough.
No, he's not, he's awkward, but he's not dorky,
No, yeah, that's the thing, he's kind of...
awkward.
He's bumbling, or he's
too cool, though,
Yeah, he's too adorable when he's being awkward.
He has really big feet.
Yeah.
He has big feet like a hobbit.
But I just remember noticing that it jumped out at me when I saw the first trailer for the first Amazing Spider-Man. He's sitting on the floor, and I was like, what are those his feet? That's his foot. It's like, that is just fucking weird.
What cartoon is it where the kids just have ridiculously sized feet? I don't remember anymore, but yeah. There's always that moment.
So... moving on. Mm-hmm. So you're looking forward to Evolve. We already talked about it.
Yeah, we mentioned Evolve. We can
talk about it, yeah. So we can sort of bump onto our next topic.
I did, before we move on, I wanted to ask the question of, do you think it's smart that the next Captain America, Captain America 3, is going to come out on the same day as the Batman versus Superman movie?
I think it is, yes, because I feel like it's gonna, I don't know, well, it could probably change. I mean, it's way too far in advance for that. I mean, it's almost crazy to think that they are absolutely going to be coming out that time, but
yeah.
I think it'll kind of point out the fumbling that the DC movies are doing by comparison. The Batman movies were good, but, because we lost the Joker, who was meant to be part of the third Batman movie, there's a weirdness to that movie. And the Superman, the asynchronous storytelling thing didn't bother me, because it sort of allowed you to not sit through the long, boring origin story. Mm-hmm. But I think that they were too proud of themselves for the whole fast action stuff. They didn't step back and think, hey, is this actually fun to watch? And the answer is mostly no.
No. The Superman of Steel was just visually, tiring. There's so much going on all the time, and just seeing everything. It was like... this quote was applied to Pacific Rim on that, movie posters quote I put on Facebook earlier, Will, but I would definitely apply this to that movie, which is that I didn't think anyone could make a Michael Bay movie worse than Michael Bay himself, and yet here we are.
Although, to be at least
just
there
everything
were...
everything got destroyed in as over-the-top as way as fucking possible.
At least there wasn't too much slow-mo.
Well,
no.
There's that... the two things I didn't really like about it was the CG stand-in things were too obvious, and If I had my say, we would just not do that. No CGI stand-ins. If you need a CGI stand-in, just make it a simple scene, like, you know, a flyby. Don't do, like, a complex fight maneuver with CGI stand-in. It's never convincing.
I was going to say, I think there's...
this shit in the 70s, and it was fine.
There was the scene where he's lifting up the crane, or whatever it was, in the rain. Yeah. And I think at one point he's a CGI stand-in. And because I was watching it, I went, wow, this looks a lot like Beowulf. Just because that was entirely CG. And actually, that they did that one pretty well, but that was because I think they stayed in CG the entire time instead of switching back and forth. So there was never really a moment of disconnect.
There is that moment where he learns to fly, and then at some point he does a loop-to-loop around some structure in, like, the Grand Canyon or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that looks so fucking fake.
Yeah.
Like, nothing can turn on that kind of a dime, and then you can see very obviously it's a CGI stand-in bending in ways that humans can't bend, and just like, this is why I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
someone didn't do the motion tween well enough.
Yeah, it's just
there's
the best shot of like in Superman Returns, going back another movie, the best flying shot was that the little thing they did at the end. You know, where he is essentially on gimbals the whole time. That's all him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the best, because you get a sense that he's there. The only thing that seems a little silly is that, you know, Superman, with all his strength, his legs are just fluttering in the breeze weakly. That's the only thing that threw me off there. But they had a couple cool shots with, like, Man of Steel. I still, like, the laugh of the red underwear is okay as far as, like, you know, it's kind of a cheesy thing to throw in. But I think maybe what they should have done is had, like, a gold belt with a red outline or something to punctuate the suit at that point, because it feels kind of empty.
I'm on the other side of that, where I actually think the opposite. I think, well, let me explain what I mean by that. First of all, I hate the Superman suit in this. It's too much. There's just too much grain all over. It needed to be brightened up, like, just a couple notches and simplified a little bit. But there's actually, I think they could have gone even more simple in certain parts of it, which is, I realize in some of the promotional artwork for the movie, the S logo on his chest shows no gold in it at all. There's no yellow. It's just blue and red, the whole suit. And I realized, you know what? That looks way better. They should have just done it like that for the movie. I know some people would have complained, but I honestly think it just looks better for that particular style they were trying to go for. If they were going to make it stylized, they should have just removed the yellow completely, because the two-tone actually looks a lot better. That's my opinion,
I mean, some scenes, the thing is so damn sparkly, it looks like it's, like, filled with, like, rhinestones.
Yeah,
in other scenes, it looks like...
I think that's them playing with their, like, light diffractor.
Yeah, other times it looks like it's, like, made of, I don't know, matte fabric. And I'm sure that there's multiple costumes and all that stuff. And he talks about, like, you know, getting into the costume, I guess, was such a... It was a good half hour of work to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
So which makes me wonder how, like, you know, in future Superman movies, how they're going to try to pretend the suit exists. Like, is it under his clothes?
They'll just paint it on.
I'll just have a big dick hanging out the whole time and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time we've seen a... It's not the first big blue dick we've seen in a movie, so.
I felt like the cape being, like, super long and, like, to the ground was kind of silly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what gets you killed. Although, doesn't he get thrown by his cape at some point, so.
Yeah, which all the more, yeah.
I mean, I think that's, like, one of the defining. I feel as if there's a moment where someone questions Superman's cape, and he says something along the lines of, like, I'm so badass that I can wear a cape, or something like that. Not in the movie, just in the comic series.
The comics don't mind being so meta.
No, they don't.
So I don't think the movie did some things right and did a lot of things wrong.
Yeah, well.
I feel like the DC, the Marvel movies are doing more along good lines. My friend hates the way that Sony has cannibalized things because they have the rights to certain Marvel properties and they've maintained them.
Yeah.
I do hate
but,
that.
And then there's that interesting, it's a spoiler. I won't mention it.
But I enjoyed X-Men First Class. It was really
good. Yeah, I liked it.
That's also the interesting part, isn't it? Because there's the new X-Men movie and the Avengers are both going to have their own version of Quicksilver in it.
Okay, you do know. Never mind.
I do know that.
That was the thing
actually,
I was going to mention.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I went to the actual panel where Joss Whedon was talking about that.
Oh,
he talked about some people. Yeah, we're gonna see what happens.
Because yeah, they're using two different actors for each person. It's a different setup.
Yeah, they mentioned the twins at the end of. Of one movie, and I was like, but we haven't. This side of the Marvel doesn't actually deal with Magneto.
It's true. He's not brought up at all, so I'm not sure how they're going to do that. Like, they called them the twins, so maybe they'll refer tangentially to a, like, genetic something or other, because they can't actually say mutants or X-Men, probably.
I wish they could just merge all the properties. I really do.
Yeah.
But despite that issue, the first Amazing Spider-Man was a little weak, in my opinion, especially the stupid lizard dude, like of all the enemies they got to pick.
Yeah.
The second one looks like it's going to be firing on all cylinders. The next X-Men looks really awesome. So, like, I'm just happy to have stuff like this. Like when I was a kid, the thought of a superhero movie, you know, the only ones that were any good was Superman. That was it. All the other attempts, like the Spider-Man stuff, was terrible. If you've seen the Spider-Man 70s show, the old Captain America thing was terrible. Just the stuff they're doing today is just amazing. And, like, you know, young Jonathan wants to be able to enjoy these things, you know. So I'm just happy it's all there. I don't really care about the drama. I do dislike the fact that the only reason they're making Superman and more Batman is to maintain the rights rather than actually let them reverge. So there's that too. That's why Superman was made.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't like the fact that that's why they did Spider-Man, for instance. I think they should have just let Marvel catch Spider-Man back and then, I don't know, have him be in the Avengers where he belongs.
I was going to say, Spider-Man's a hero, you know, other than, like, thinking about the comparison of Batman and Superman, Spider-Man's a hero that can actually stand equally with the Avengers.
Instead
of being like Hawkeye or sort of being there but not really being their equal.
Can you imagine Spider-Man with the rest of, with like Robert Downey Jr. and Spider-Man?
I honestly can't imagine Andrew Garfield interacting with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh my God, they would just they're trying to be outwit each other the whole movie.
That's my problem, is like, I feel like it would be way too obnoxious. But, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe someday.
So let's begin to tie this off.
Fair enough.
What are you playing lately, Patrick?
Me? Well, I'd say what I've been playing. My attempts at gaming have mostly been with things that I know my computer will run.
Minesweeper?
No, what that means, first of all, fuck you. Second of all, means is that I have been going back and playing a bunch of other games that I bought but never really got around to playing, mostly indie games. So I tried out something called DLC Quest because it looked funny, and it wasn't. I didn't really enjoy it. Whatever. So the next game I tried out was something called Evoland, which I'm playing right now. It's like, it's basically a parody / homage to RPGs throughout the ages, because it starts out black and white, no sound, two dimensions, and then it starts upgrading more and more as you go. And first half of the game plays Zelda style, and then it upgrades, and there's a fight system like Final Fantasy, and it ends up playing like Final Fantasy, but it starts out 2D, and the game ends in 3D. So it's called Evoland because the game is evolving while you play it, which was a really interesting concept. It's all right. It's whatever. It's more of like a parody and homage than an actual game in its own right. So, you know, but it's... I've been killing time doing that. The other one I've been doing is, I mentioned this earlier, I was totally into Bit Trip Runner before.
Yeah, and the second one, right?
The second one came out last year, but I only really started playing it recently, and I love it so much. It is so goofy. The colors are great. The soundtrack is great. The way they integrate into the game is really fun. The visuals, I thought going away from sort of the 8-bit inspired art style that the whole Bit Trip series has been really based on would be a bad idea, but I actually really like the new goofy art style. But, like, just to give you an idea, like, kind of sense of humor of this game, this is the kind of game that, like, art style-wise looks like it was made for 5-year-olds, but has level names like Morning Wood, Trippin' on Herbs, and a costume change that is literally called the fucking turkey suit, except Ucking is starred out.
Of course.
But, yeah, just to give you an idea of this game's sense of humor, it's like, yeah, the game is, like, rated teen for, like, raunchy. It's like, why is it... Oh, that's why. You know. But, no, it's really fun. It's goofy. It doesn't take itself seriously, and I like that about the game, because the design mechanics of the game are really strong, but it still doesn't take itself seriously. And it's narrated by Charles Martinet, who is the voice of Mario. Wahoo! And they got him to be himself instead of playing a character, which was interesting. So, literally, he starts the game out by going, "My name is Charles Martinet, and now it's time for Bit Trip Runner Presents 2, or whatever it is he says. But yeah, it's great. It's fun. But really, right now, I've been so busy that my gaming has really been more about killing time and less about actually gaming. So
more and more I'm having to fit it into my schedule.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. What about you, William?
Well, as I've sort of mentioned a lot, I've been playing Kerbal Space Program. I put, 100 hours in the past couple weeks.
Only nerds play that game.
Yeah, well, I like orbital physics, so, whatever. Yeah. And I've also been grinding. Cool. I've been grinding on the Diablo 3 expansion. And, those have been the big things that I've been doing. I guess you could also say I've been playing Java, but that's just doing homework, so it doesn't really count. And I'm hoping...
That sounds like whenever I fire up a console, the only game I get to play is the update game.
Yeah. And
that is fun.
I'm kind of hoping to get into a couple other games here in the nearish future. I'm going to be starting classes again, and I'm hoping that... the impetus when I come home from class and go, okay, I want to relax, will be to, play another game, new, that I haven't been playing, to relax.
Well, what I think about a lot of the games, I like things that are enjoyable in bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
Like a level in Dishonored, a map in Battlefield and those things.
I'll have to find something for that, because I'm looking at my game list, and they're all... RPGs or huge expansive, I've got Fallouts, I've got Elder Scrolls, I've got, Borderlands, BioShock, all of these games are, Elder Scrolls, all of these games are huge, but it's hard to say, okay, this 10-minute module can...
BioShock isn't that long.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess the smallest bite-sized game I have is something like Mirror's Edge.
Mirror's Edge is really short, but also really fun. Very visceral.
I really enjoyed that.
And if you like that, then Dishonored is up your alley.
Okay, I might take a look at that.
Dishonored I started playing and really liked, but I just realized, no, my computer can't take this ass-whooping.
In Dishonored, I forget the name of it, but it's an agility perk that allows you to do like a sort of a double jump. But it's not a double jump. It's just that he gets like a little boost in the middle of his jump for some reason.
Okay.
But you don't trigger it. It just does it by itself. But trigger that plus the blink, and the possibilities of navigating the environment are just endless.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of gameplay and getting into these really weird, interesting rooftop positions looked kind of cool.
The psychotic killing angle of the game is so enjoyable, but the game rewards you more if you
are stealthy.
Restrain yourself. Yeah. So I have to, strangle people. And
well, just do the old Elder Scrolls strategy of saving, slaughtering the city, and then loading.
Yeah, I have done that.
And there you go.
And it's the best when you kill the enemy you came there to kill, like the one you came to assassinate, because your character goes full bore. Let's stab him in the gut, let's stab him in the throat, and then push the handle of the sword so he spins around, and then slice again so his head comes completely off. And it's like, he doesn't do that to anybody else, but that boss person gets to feel all angles of the blade.
Nice.
So anyway, my little du jour lately is the Splinter Cell Blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been having part of my push to do gaming in the living room is I've been actually having pains in my hand from doing clerical work at the office so much, and that's one of the things that happens when you do this as you get older. And so I was using a gamepad for a lot of things. So Splinter Cell is the first game in a long time that I've actually allowed myself to use WASD and a mouse again. And there's a section I walk through where I've got an enemy in tow. He's holding him down with his left arm. Meanwhile, I'm holding his pistol out because he's trying to cover him and get him through the zone. And I'm perfectly headshotting with my pistol the enemies who are walking through with their night vision goggles. I'm like, this is the kind of stuff I couldn't do with a gamepad. Because you're not quick enough to the headshot. You know, and if you miss, they'll notice you and turn and start spraying their submachine gun at you, which is, you know, not good for the survival of the target. So anyway, that's been my... After seeing the pseudo gamey like section of Captain America, I suddenly wanted to do a game like this, and that's what's got me back in my Splinter Cell. I'm so easily influenced by popular media.
Yeah, that's all right.
I watch the Clone Wars, like, I need more Star Wars in my life. You know, just, everything seems to control me. All right, Patrick, let's throw this podcast in reverse and back.
Yeah, why don't we? What? Okay. Well, for Over the Fence, this has been Patrick, which is me, Jonathan,
which is me,
and William.
Well, I'm the only one left, so I guess that's me.
And not Eric, because he was off being busy somewhere.
Off having a
good night.
Yeah.
Good night.
Podcast for people who don't have lives.
Yes.
Wait.
Shit.
So long, right. Farewell. The feed is in good.
Thanks for all the fish.